A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, an epic battle between light and dark was fought.
We're your hosts, Shalom and Courtney, and we're calling all
Jedi junkies.
From Tatooine to Jakku, to buckle up for this hyperdrive adventure through the galaxy.
You're listening to Jedi Junkies on Almost Nerdy.
We are going to spoil these movies, so make sure you've already watched them.
Okay, welcome guys. We are so excited to have you.
Yes, we are. Today we are talking about Solo.
Solo.
A Star Wars story.
Not a solo in a song, but it's like Solo. Han Solo.
You're lame. We're going to move on from that.
I'm old.
We're going to pretend like that didn't happen. Okay. So we really enjoy this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't enjoy it the first time around. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to explain that after we do our rating and our two-sentence summary.
Yeah.
Today on our episode, we are also going to have our expert nerd, Joe Pedro.
Taking us to deep space.
Yes. Deep space.
Yeah. I can't say it without
with your deep voice.
Deep space.
Joe will be explaining some stuff to us because this movie actually includes a decent amount of canon knowledge, which we do not have because we have just never invested
in that. Yeah, and there's like a weird thing that happens with Darth Maul showing up and it's like, okay, what the heck?
My favorite villain. I love him.
We're like, what the heck is that? Yeah. So Joe explains to us why that happens.
Yeah, and also something really interesting. We were watching some of the bonus features for Solo. And we got to listen to, like, some of the writers and producers talk about it.
Yeah.
And so the one guy who wrote and co-wrote and he produced.
It was father and son, actually.
Yeah, it was father and son, actually. So the dad actually worked on the original saga. And he's a very Star Wars purist.
Yes.
And his son, who has always been around Star Wars, grew up around Star Wars, you know, he is really deep into the canon.
Yeah.
So they had to, like, compromise for this movie on how to stay pure and how to include some canon.
Yeah.
So I think that was really interesting and something that we haven't seen in the movie so far. Yeah. Because for the most part, they've ignored canon completely. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the first one that they've been like...
So he's pure to the movies.
Yeah, pure to the movies.
And...
The sun.
Kind of, the sun is kind of like the lore, the deep stuff, like, you know.
Exactly.
So, in a sense, they're both kind of pure.
Well, they call it, if you just follow the movies, they call that a Star Wars purist.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. So, you have to stay within, like, the George Lucas, like, him working on the project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Okay, Shalom, are you ready for your two-sentence summary?
Yes, I'm going to wing it, and it's going to be awesome.
You're going to wing it, because that's very Han Solo of you.
Very Han Solo. All right, so here is what I think happened in this movie. Okay, so Han Solo joins with a gang of robbers in order to make enough money to buy a ship and go back to the love of his life.
Aww.
Very touching. It's very a touching story. Turns out that Kira is working closely with the head honcho of this gang who wants to steal hyperfuel, or rather buy hyperfuel that's stolen. You know, whatever works.
However piracy works. However
piracy works. And they have to find a way to defeat him. Because they realize that he's actually a really bad guy. I mean, he's bad already, but...
I'm just not sure that was two sentences.
It was two sentences.
Was it?
It was like, you know, I kind of added like buts and commas.
I added buts.
How would Han Solo describe this movie? I think I just did that.
Okay. Maybe. I don't know.
No, but it's so confusing because I think, here's the thing, it's like, I think, yes, there's obviously the story of Han Solo and mm-hmm. the girl that he loves, mm-hmm. but then there's also the story of the rebels, you know, which is pretty significant, but we only find out about this towards the end.
I'm a true believer that the love story is actually between Han and Chewie.
Hmm.
They're just besties. That's real love.
But they don't really highlight it, though. They That's don't what really I like to think. Focus. The conversations don't really focus on that.
They're just best friends. Just you know what I mean? Just let it happen. Just let me have my dream, Shalom.
Okay. 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 I have so much to say, but I will let you have this.
Okay. How would you rate this movie?
I would give it a 7.5.
Out of 10?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's good. But it's not, like, fantastic. But it's good. Mm. Before, I would have given it, like, a 5. Mm-hmm. But watching it again, I actually enjoyed it. It's good. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Mm-hmm. I would give it an 8. Mm. I'd give it a solid 8. I think it's a pretty good movie. Mm-hmm. So, what I was saying earlier, I think that Han is just not my favorite character.
Yeah.
I think, as a feminist, I find him very offensive in many ways. Mm. I think that he's very much, like, a character of his time.
Mm-hmm.
I think mm-hmm. something mm-hmm. that's exciting to be said mm-hmm. about it is I feel like they kind of gave him a modern twist. So originally when I went in, I already went in thinking,
so you mean,
like,
Han Solo the from the main...
Yeah, Harrison Ford, when Harrison
right.
Ford plays
okay.
him.
Okay, I think okay.
He's a sexist character, you know? Right. Like, he's a jerk to Leia.
Yeah.
And then she's just falls in love with him. I just find that really annoying and... Yeah, I just don't like it. So I think going in to watch it at the movie theaters, like, I already kind of had a bad attitude about it. I was like, this is not my favorite character. Yeah. I find him offensive. Like, I just don't enjoy watching him.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I love the Star Wars universe. So, like, I want to see what was happening here. Like, I want to know what was going on.
Yeah.
Kira was a super interesting character. I liked her a lot.
She was.
I liked L3 a lot.
Yes.
Like, there's Lando is, I think, also kind of offensive, but, like, not as offensive.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Maybe we just don't see enough of him for me to get offended by him.
Do you find this Lando offensive, like, in this movie?
No, and that's what I'm getting at. I actually don't find Han or Lando offensive in this movie. Like, wow. I think they actually gave him kind of a modern twist. I don't know if it's... that they were like, he's a younger character, so he still has that swag. Both of them have that. Both of them kind of have that swagger. They both kind of have that, like, way about them.
Yeah.
But they're not quite, like, real adults yet.
Yeah.
So I think there's, like, a little bit more of an innocence to them. One of the biggest debates that has ever had is, like, is Han a bad guy or a good guy? Did he shoot first, you know, in the cantina scene? Like, did he shoot first? And that's, like, a huge debate.
Mm.
And in this movie, they very much push on, like, he's a good guy, he's a good guy, he's a good guy.
Mm.
Like, even though he's a pirate, he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they really pushed on that, which was interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoy it. I think it's a good action movie.
Mm.
I really liked all the new characters they brought in.
Yeah.
The one thing that I do remember in theaters that I was really annoyed about was I just... felt like they killed off Val and Rio so soon.
Mm.
You know? And I was really annoyed by that because I thought that those characters seemed super interesting and it's like we only got like 10 minutes of them. You know? Well, maybe it was longer than that. But it only felt like 10 minutes. It felt like this really short. So I think off the bat, I was like just kind of annoyed because... And on top of that, Star Wars has been known for, you know, not really having that many people of color or anything like that in big roles. And it's like, so you kill off the one woman of color who's like, you can already tell is like BA, you know? I was like, right, and she gets really killed off like right away.
Yeah.
I do think it helped the story. I do think it helped the story go along and it put,
Beckett.
Yeah. Well, Beckett in a place where he needed Han and Chewie.
Right.
Otherwise they would have ditched them, I think.
Yeah.
So I get it. But I think that was kind of one of my initial reactions why I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
But overall, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I agree with a lot that you said. Yeah, definitely Han had a lot of sexist vibes in the...
Original.
And I think they definitely changed it. And I think with Han, it was kind of, like, weird because he wasn't, like, chasing all the girls. You're not, yeah, like running around. He had one person. So it's in both this movie and also in the series, he's kind of focused on one,
mm-hmm,
one girl that he's harassing pretty much the whole, yeah, time. And but in this series, it's less of harassing. He's already dating her.
Yeah.
You know, he's already in a relationship, so you don't have that vibe, mm-hmm, of, you know, sexism, you know, but rather he's actually almost the opposite kind of, you know. And
he's a little bit more fresh, a little, yeah, bit more puppy dog in, yeah, this one, I would say.
Yeah. A whole lot more. He's gullible. She's the one who's like
playing him,
but not, yeah, from the beginning, but like in when they meet again, she's, mm-hmm, the one who's messing with him, mm-hmm, you know? And yeah, so it was, to be honest, it's refreshing to see that angle, mm-hmm, of Han Solo. And I think almost part of it is, are they trying to kind of justify the character that he becomes?
I think they are. I think they're trying to show, like, you know, he gets burned by Kira, and right, that's how he becomes this way. That's how, yeah, he kind of becomes, like, a womanizer a little bit.
Yeah.
So I do feel like they were trying to build that up, yeah, in the story.
Yeah, which is not an excuse, but...
It's not an excuse, I think, but it makes me feel for you.
They're trying, yeah. They're it makes me empathize. I don't know if empathize is the right word, but it makes me, like, kind of understand a little bit more. You know, it's like watching the thing that's in right now is the complex hero. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, complex hero, but also the complex villain,
mm-hmm,
where the villain... You have, especially in series, you'll see like the first three episodes, the villain is slashing heads, sucking blood out of, you know, the innocent, and then...
What movies are you watching?
I'm thinking of so many different, different things. And then season two, you have one moment where the hero and the villain are stuck in this building, and then the villain is like, I grew up, blah, 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 blah. Then you start to feel sorry for the villain. Mm-hmm. And then if the writers try to push it, the villain and the hero fall in love. And yeah. So it's kind of like...
Okay.
You know, like, and uh-huh, and I'm thinking a lot of Buffy and Spike. But oh, yeah, anyways.
I was going for maybe Hook and Emma.
And Emma from, yeah, Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, like, I don't know.
Suck your blood, Spike. Okay, I get it now.
Suck your blood. I went there because for me, that's one of the annoying ones. You know? You know, because it's like, I think that's kind of what's in right now is like, the complex, mm-hmm, villain, you know, the, mm-hmm, the Tony Soprano, you know, those kind of personalities who you hate but you begin to love them, you know, and, mm-hmm, understand them a bit. And I think that that's almost what they're trying to lean really heavy on, because she burns him. He, mm-hmm, that's like legit burning.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows what she's going to do in the next, if they ever do it again.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what's going to happen. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and going off what you said, one of the things that I really liked was at the very beginning of the movie, when we're first introduced to Han and Kira,
uh-huh,
and they're trying to get away, and then they're, like, in that cave room, mm-hmm, and the, like, I forget her name, whatever the, like, overlord lady's name, mm-hmm, is, she's, like, looks like a centipede, and
yeah,
he's like, I've got a bomb, and he just goes, like, and she's like, that's a rock. You just made a clicking sound. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it was Proxima, really... right? Proxima?
Yeah, yeah. Proxima. Madame Proxima. That's, yeah, what it was. So I think that was interesting because, like, so often we just have these situations where, yeah, it's like the main hero, right? Mm-hmm. The hero's really smart and everybody, mm-hmm, else is really stupid.
Yeah.
And I,
yeah,
really liked that part because she's like, that's a rock.
Right.
You know? And so I do like the added complexity, mm, of, like, it's not always, like, the good guy's really smart and everybody, mm-hmm, else is really stupid.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's nice to see what you were saying, the complexity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun. It's fun to watch.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm, what was your initial reaction to Han's backstory? Like, was this kind of what you were expecting? Were you expecting this type, mm, of story when you, like, went into it?
Yeah. You almost need to show a very drastic opposite in order to show, like, opposite good in order to justify the terribleness of a person. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean? So I think that they... I think they did a good job in balancing those two things out, of saying, okay, he was deeply in love. He loved this girl so much. He even joined the army. He started flying around because he was just in love with this girl. Mm-hmm. He was obsessed with this girl. And so that sort of personality, you know, I felt like really explained what we have seen before in the original trilogy. So yeah, I wasn't surprised. I wasn't shocked. Mm-hmm. I was actually more like, oh wow, that's to be expected almost, you know?
I really enjoyed it. One of the things that I think I enjoyed the most was seeing him in the Imperial Army, because we don't really see that perspective. You know what I mean? I thought that was really interesting to see him there.
Yeah.
And you know, he's sitting there, he's like, this is crazy. My general just got blown up, you know? Yeah. I thought that was fun. That was really good. I liked that you could see that he was already kind of like a daredevil, already kind of like a swindler, already kind of, you know, he's got the street smarts, you know? That was something that I think he really showed in the original trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even in the new ones, where he's in the first one.
Yeah.
Of the new trilogy. So I think that was really nice to kind of make those connections. Like, okay, he grew up on the streets. He's had a hard life his whole life. But at the same time, he's super, super dedicated to someone. He spent 3 years trying to figure out how to get back to Kira.
Yeah, that's huge.
You know, three years. That's such a long time.
Yeah.
And he's like, I almost have my ship. I've almost done it. I'm almost there. You know? So I think I really, really like that a lot. Speaking of the scene where at the beginning where he left Kira. What do you think about that? Would you have left her? Do you think he had an option to stay? What would have happened, you know?
I mean, she was right. They would have killed him, you know? And I think... And they would have killed them both, you know? Or rather, just killed him. And then she would have no chance of getting out, so to speak. And I mean, things don't work out anyways at the end of the day. But I think that it made sense for him to say, okay, I'm going to get what I need. And then I'm going to come back and I'm gonna rescue her, you know? So it makes sense. I don't know if that's what I would have done. I don't know. I feel like with stuff like that, it just, you can never know how you would react, you know? I think it just happens in the moment, you know? I think the heart of it is I want to rescue the person I love, you know? So besides that, it's like,
do you play the long game or do you try to save her in the moment?
Yeah. So that's one of those.
Yeah.
You
know? I feel like I would have to leave because it's like, what are you going to, you need to get to a place where you can advantageously have the power, you know? And he didn't have anything in this moment.
Yeah.
So I feel like he needed to leave.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So as I said before, I think that Star Wars is all about Han and Chewie. So, what did you think about the two of them meeting?
Wow. I thought that it made so much sense. You know, coming from how Chewie was captured, you know, in the second trilogy / first, it's so confusing.
It's an in-between.
The first, second trilogy. I think it kind of makes sense. Chewie has reached this point where he's kind of crazed and he's apparently eating people. You know, and right? And then, you know, he meets someone who actually speaks his language, which I'll touch on that, like, in my theme. You know, and they actually strike a friendship from there. And I think there's something really cool about that moment. I like how the writers compare it to like a romantic story, how people they start off fighting, you know, punch, 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 and then you fall in love, and then, you know, which is why I see where you're coming from. I don't totally agree that the whole thing is
I'm being dramatic.
I don't think so. But I see that. You see that friendship that they strike, which I think is beautiful to see them, you know, connect. And I think it's awesome.
I think, though, like, to my point, though, I think sometimes movies will downplay that type of, like, friendship love, like, brotherly love, sisterly love. Like, I think that those friendships are so deep and so meaningful, and they're very important, and I feel like we don't see stories like that often.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why I really, really enjoy the Han and Chewie relationship. Because I think, like, they would die for each other, you know? Like, they're those ride and die, and, like, I don't think you see a lot of movies like that. I think we're seeing more like that now.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy that about these two. And I love that the way that they meet is, like, actually through conflict, because that is just very Han of everything. Everything is a conflict with him. So, like, I think it just makes sense that, like, initially he's, like, being fed to this beast. But instead of seeing him as a beast, he is clever enough to change that to his advantage. And then it befriends him. And that's, like, you know. That's how they make it together.
Yeah.
I did really, really enjoy that a lot.
Yeah.
So I have to say, probably my favorite part of this whole movie, though, is the Kessel Run. Because how many times do they talk about the Kessel Run in the original trilogy? You know what I mean? It's like, the Kessel Run, the Kessel Run, the Kessel Run. And to see it and see what, like, it actually is, and to see, like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's dangerous, it's daring, it's crazy. Like, what they have to do is so intense.
Yeah.
So I really, really enjoyed that a lot.
Yes, yes. And I think it would have been very weird for them not to do that.
Yes.
You know, with all its mentions. You know? Like, it's like doing a Game of Thrones prequel without talking about Valeria or talking about, you know, like it's like, it's that sort of thing where it's so ingrained into their relationship, you know. And I mean, by there, I mean Chewie and Han. And I think it's something that's special. So you want to talk about that, you know?
Did it live up to everything you expected?
Absolutely.
It was better than what I expected.
Absolutely.
I was not very expecting it.
Very... There's a comical kind of edge to it, like with L3 starting a revolution.
L3.
Oh my gosh.
I loved her. And I didn't realize this, but she actually, like, played L3. Like, she's not just voicing it. Like, she's actually there suit. Like, she's actually in a CGI suit acting the whole thing out.
Yeah.
And then they just superimposed L3 over her.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that. Like, I was 100% not expecting that. Like, you don't usually see a voice actor. I mean, like, Rocket is a great example in Bradley Guardians Cooper, of the Galaxy. Like, that's not Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
It's, like, there's another guy acting out the part of Rocket, and then Bradley Cooper just does the voice.
Yes.
So it's like, you don't normally see that. So I thought that was really cool.
And being in heels and everything. Yeah. And that's cool.
To make her the right height, she had to wear heels sometimes. So she was like, I felt like a sassy robot. It was great.
The robot walked like it's a sassy kind of vibe to it. You know?
I loved it. The other thing I thought was really interesting about L3 was that she was clearly sentient. You know what I mean? And I think that that has always been kind of a question that I've had about droids. Like, are they sentient? Are they not? Like, it seems like some are more than others.
Yeah.
And I think C-3PO makes a comment to R2-D2 one time about, like, just follow orders or something. Like, and clearly R2-D2, like, has a mind of his own.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then there are other robots that seem like it, or droids, I should say, that seem like they don't have any mind at all.
But isn't that people too?
You're so rude.
No, I mean, let's be honest. Like, I feel like, you know, you get different personalities where there are people who don't have a mind of their own, to be honest. Like, you know, I mean, they have minds, but it's kind of like they are part of a hive mind where everyone they follow the wave and they follow the trends and everything. So they don't really, or they are under someone who's telling them everything and they just like obey that robotically. You know, and then you've got people who are like, screw that, I'm going to do my own thing. So it's like, so I think that like.
So you think that's the L3?
I, you know, and I think it's just personality differences. C-3PO reminds me of people who are more like rules based or like, well, let's do this. Let's be careful. Let's be cautious. And then R2-D2, you know,
he's so sassy.
Is like, I'm out. I'm out, bro.
I can't wait until we get to the R2-D2 movies. I love him.
Yeah, oh my gosh. They're going to be so good.
Most of the original series is just R2-D2 being sassy to C-3PO and then getting into trouble. That's like the majority of it. I have a feeling
it's going to be like, they're going to make a lot of people cry. It's going to be a crying experience.
In the one that's coming out?
Yeah. Lots of crying.
Mm-hmm. Just because of R2-D2?
No. Oh. Just because, like, I mean, like, C-3PO has a moment in the
trailer
where he goes, like, I just want to, like, one last time. And they're like,
ah! I know. That would be sad. It's
Toy Story all over again.
It's Toy Story! We already did this with Woody. Don't do this to me again. Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Back to L3, though. Like, talking about Solo. Back to L3. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting when they had, like, that fighting ring and the droids were, like, fighting each other. She's like, you don't have to do this. Like, fight the power.
Yeah.
And then she starts, and then later on when they're doing the castle run, she, removes all the bolts from them. And she's like, rebellion.
Yeah, she's definitely an activist
type
of personality who's very much like confrontational. And I think that's really cool. I like the scene where she's like, don't look at me.
Yeah, don't look at me. She's like, I can't perform.
I can feel you looking at me.
Don't look at me. Oh my gosh. She was really great.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask Joe this question later. I'm interested to see what he has to say as like a true Star Wars nerd.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about the casting of Alden as Han and Donald Glover. as Lando?
Yeah, like I don't see it right now. I think that Alden is a bit soft. And Harrison Ford has got this very...
almost like a gristle
to, right? to his personality. And even the way he talks, the way he expresses himself, it's gruff. It's like, you know, it's very tough. And Alden is tough, but he's a softie. Like, but then you can almost explain that way by saying, okay, but Alden is in love and he's naive and he's like in that place where he just wants to give his whole life to Kira and wants to spend the rest of his life with her and then he gets heartbroken and so forth. But even with the heartbreak of Kira flying away, you know, cool shot by the way with her looking outside the window, you know, that whole scene, that's what does it. I don't think that was enough. That's not enough to make someone like what Harrison Ford's Han Solo becomes. Because he becomes complete something else. I hope that in the next movie that they accomplish that and actually create a series of events that create that gristle, that gruff that Harrison Ford brings to the character. Hopefully we don't go down the same path that we went down with Anakin, where Anakin is kind of the same as a pouty baby, whiny, like all these like things. Even when he becomes bad and he's like fighting Obi-Wan on with the molten lava, he's just whiny the whole time. It's just a baby. And then all of a sudden he's like, whoa, rah, rah, rah. You know, it's like, okay, you know, and I that connection is so hard to see between the two personalities. And so I hope that they learn from that and kind of really learn, like in the next movie, push Alden to the point where, or the character that Alden, like the Han Solo that Alden is playing, pushes it to the point where that gristle begins to come out.
I definitely agree. I thought that Donald Glover was such just a genius pick. for mm-hmm. Lando.
Yeah.
I think what is difficult is we don't see a ton of Lando, right? Mm, in the original.
Yeah.
We see a lot of Han. Mm-hmm. So there's, I feel like there's a lot more room for, like, Donald Glover to, like, play around.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like he's got more room to kind of play and add on.
Yeah.
I think another hard thing about being recast, like, when they recast, right? Mm. Especially when it's an actor who's playing, like, a younger version of a character.
Uh-huh.
What I think is difficult about that is you are not only expected to take, like, what is there, but you're expected to kind of put your own twist, like, make it your own.
Yeah.
And I think it's easier with a character who is not as, I don't want to say popular. I want to say, like, maybe doesn't have as much screen time.
Mm-hmm. True.
You know?
True.
I think that people like Lando, but again, we only see a little bit of him.
Yes.
And his love of capes.
Yes.
That's what we know about him.
Yes.
Wish that closet scene was hilarious.
Yeah.
So many capes. So, you know what I mean? So, I think that maybe he had an easier time at it. Alden, I thought, did a good job. I mean, he sounded just like him. I thought he did a really good job sounding like him.
I don't know if it sounded like
just the way that his, like, dictation of words, the way he delivered lines, like, cadence. It was very...
No, the cadence is good.
But it was,
like,
really good.
Like, Harrison's got this, like, I don't believe. Like, deep, like his voice is, like, it's
yeah, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, like, his, like, cadence, like, his delivery of lines I thought was very good. I just think...
I agree with that.
If you're not literally a clone of the person, like, I just think I think that's really hard. I think it's really
difficult. It's very hard.
I think he had a difficult go at it. I also think that, again, I think it's a character that we all know and love. He has a lot of screen time.
Yes.
So there's, like, a lot of things that we just know about him.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I think it gives you a little bit less room as an actor to play around. And it's a character that a lot of people love. Like, a lot of people, it's like, you ask, who's your favorite character from Star Wars? And a lot of people will say Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very accessible. I mean, the cadence, I totally agree with that. I think there's just this, you know, when you're talking to someone who's wide-eyed and, you know, bright and shiny, like, I feel like that's what Alden's Han Solo is right now.
Which I think is allowed. I mean? Because that's where he is in life.
I just hope that they transition that well and actually, like, have him show a little bit, even in his early age, you know, or rather the early age of Han Solo before, you know, we meet him for the first time in the first three, I don't even know. But those ones, you know, is the first time we're introduced to him. Like, we get to, like, kind of connect the two characters together. I think that's my only concern. He's doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just concerned about that.
Well, I mean, we don't know if there's going to be another Han Solo movie.
Right. So. If not, then I would have problems with that character. I think that's where, if they don't do it again, then, like, I can say, they kind of fell short with that, you know.
Okay, I think the last thing I want to talk about before we move on to themes is the storyline with Enfys Nest. Because a lot of this movie has been, like, pirate versus pirate. So I really was not expecting that character to basically be the basis of the rebellion.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Very, very nicely tucked in there, you know? I think they found a clever way to... Obviously, that's what Star Wars about. It's like, there's the Emperor, there's the Rebellion.
Yeah.
And then there are all these heroes. Luke Skywalker, yada, yada, yada. But I think it was really cool of them to tell a deeper story, like Han Solo's story, and yet at the same time highlight the growth of the Rebellion. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. And I liked how at the end, you know, this whole time we're expecting, like, he's got, like, the decoy, like, fuel, right? Where, like, he's got this decoy fuel.
Yeah.
It's like, even, I keep calling him Vision, even though he's not Vision in this movie.
Vision.
Even Vision is like, oh, great copy. It almost looks real. And he's like, 'cause it is. it is real. Like, that's the real thing.
Yeah.
So I like that it's, you're always like, only an idiot would be being the real thing here. And then he did. He really did it. So I really, yeah, I liked it that it kind of tied it all together. Yeah. You get to see the beginning of the rebellion. You get to see, like, that people are already, like, fed up with the Empire, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I really enjoyed that. Mm. And you get to see, like, you know, I think the whole point is they really want people to understand that Han is a good guy.
Yes.
At the end of the day. Like, he really is motivated by good intentions.
Yes, he is. Yeah, I agree with that. Like, you see where his allegiance is. You know, even though, I mean, he didn't want to help Chewie in the tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
But then he gives him the weapon, you know? And so you can see his heart in a lot of things, you know? And I think that like it was the emphasis was such a good way of that complete turnaround for Han to say, okay, I'm a good guy, you know? We both know that it turns out badly because we know the characters from the new, old, new, whatever. and we see that he becomes sour again, or rather becomes sour and kind of walks away from whatever turnaround moment he has with Enfys Nest.
Yeah, what do you mean? Because he does join the rebellion.
Well then?
He does join the rebellion.
No, in the old movies, he died. He's not part of the rebellion. He's not part of that gang.
Yeah, but he joins it.
The rebellion?
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, when we meet him. That's what I mean. That's why I said when we meet him, he's no longer part of the rebellion.
Well, he's not part of the rebellion here either.
Yeah, but then he joins he helps the rebellion there. And then when we meet him, he doesn't even care about it anymore. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's like, he helps them out. He risks his life to help them, right? And then all of a sudden in the old movies, he doesn't even care about helping them at all.
At the end of the day, Han is, they're trying to show that he's a good guy and he's going to help the rebellion when he can.
But he doesn't really want to help them at all.
No, he doesn't.
He has a turnaround moment where he helps the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
But he constantly, almost like when we watch the originals, he constantly has to be convinced to do the right thing, you know? And so the turnaround moment was kind of short-lived. And obviously there's a whole story between that with Kira or whatever experiences in between this time and when they meet Luke Skywalker and so forth. Whatever, we don't really land on him just being a good guy who's ready to help.
That's true.
We don't really land on that. We kind of stay on that for a little bit and we're like, oh, nice, you know, feels warm. Then he goes to help Jabba. Goes to help, you know, Jabba the Hutt, you know, and God knows what happens after that.
Jabba. Jawanga Wanga.
Jawanga Wanga. Yeah.
So my theme comes from when Beckett and Rio and Val are all sitting there with Han and Chewie, and Han is translating what Chewie's saying. And he gets to this one part and he's like, I don't know if he said tribe or family. And Val's like, well, what's the difference? And I think for a character like Han, where you can feel really isolated, right? And I think that this is actually kind of a theme that you see throughout the Star Wars universe. We have a lot of people coming from slavery, a lot of people coming from broken homes, like they're abandoned. Like, you see that a lot with characters within the Star Wars universe, right? Yeah. They focus a lot on, like, kind of the dejected. And I think for them, I think you can look at people with families and be very, like, jealous of that, or be like, oh, I'll never have that, or something like that. And I think it was just changing that mindset to be like, you might not have, like, a genetic family, but you can have a tribe. You can have, like, an adopted family, like, a close-knit family. And I'd see that a lot with Han and Chewie.
Yeah.
You know, where I'm obsessed with them. Just being besties.
Yeah.
So, I think that's really important to remember, is that I think sometimes we put this emphasis on Janine family, but unfortunately, like, there are terrible things that can happen in the world where you'll lose those people. Mm. And I think that it's just as important to have your tribe, you know, other people who are maybe not genetically related to you, but are just as supportive of you, just as helpful, like, have your back all the time, you know, your ride or dies. And I think that Chewie is that for him.
Mm. Okay, so my theme kind of touches on the meeting point between Chewie and Han, and how Chewie calms down when Han speaks his language.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty cool. Like, I was like, wow, like, language is so cool. You know, like, where, you know, in an instance where maybe no one has understood you, like, like, it's even, like, I think of going to, you go to, like, when I would travel and maybe go to Abu Dhabi or something like that, and you're walking around and no one understands you, and I'm comfortable in those situations, but you tense up a little bit because no one hears you, no one gets you, no one, you know, especially if people, like, think you're, like Chewie in this instance, think you're savage or, you know, this evil, like, thing, you know, and then all of a sudden you hear someone speak your language. It's, there's a calming effect that has, you know, where it's like, you're like, oh, like, hey, like, that's so cool. Like, hey, you speak my language, you know, and it almost, like, disarms you a little bit. And I think, I think that there's a power in learning, not just in terms of the actual tongue language, but the, you know, how people communicate and how people receive information. Sometimes there's power in understanding that, so that even people who feel like they're alone and they don't have anyone, sometimes the best way to make someone feel accepted and part of something is to actually show them that, hey, like, I understand your language, I hear your language, and sometimes communicating with people the way that they understand, you know. And I think it is a way of disarming and sometimes helps remove conflict and pave a better way forward.
Yeah, and in this instance, like, when you look at Chewie and Han, like, Han uses him understanding Chewbacca to, like, his advantage, right? So they're literally planning to escape right under these guys' feet.
Yeah.
And they can't understand them, you know what I mean? Like, they literally plan right under them. And, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, I think language and the way we use language is really important, because the way that you use language can either, you could have the same idea as someone else, right?
Yeah.
And the way that you deliver it can mean that it's going to be accepted or not.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, because I think sometimes it's like, do you communicate in order for someone to hear you communicate or for someone to actually understand you? Because if you communicate just to be like, oh, I want you to hear my voice, the sound of my voice, that's cool. Okay, do your thing, you know, whatever. But you're saying, like, hey, I want to communicate so that I actually want to make a difference. Then if people don't understand what you're saying, then you're not going to have that impact that you're supposed to have. And I think that sometimes it's learning other people's language, sometimes stepping outside your comfort zone and saying, okay, how do people communicate? How do people hear this? Wow.
Even if it's in your, like, native tongue, like, you speak English, like, just because we all speak English, like, there's different ways of communicating English so that people can understand you better.
So that, you know, because that's how you pave the way forward. Otherwise, we're just, like, yelling at each other and nothing gets done, you know. Yeah.
So, I think it's time for Deep Space with Joe Tatro. Deep Space. So, we are going to hear from Joe, but first, we're going to take a quick break.
Each week, when we put out an episode of Almost Nerdy, I am most excited about sharing themes. I love diving into the story and the characters, pulling out these lessons that are so relevant to real life today. When we did an episode on Avatar, we were blown away by just how the story of the humans invading Pandora, taking advantage of the natives and the resources, is such a parallel to colonization. After each recording, we are even more excited to share these lessons with you guys. It's amazing some of the feedback that we've gotten about how people see the movies differently. It's amazing when someone says, hey, maybe you missed this. And we love that because we get to grow together with you. If you enjoy our podcast and are wondering how you can support us, the best way is by giving small monthly donations so that we can dedicate more time and grow this community. If you would like to do this, you can find the link in the podcast info. Thanks, guys.
Okay, so we want to welcome back Joe.
Here I am.
Thank you. I have some questions for you today.
All right.
Because Solo definitely pushed me out of my comfort zone.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so first of all, I think it is very hard to recast a character.
Definitely.
And in this case, they had to recast several characters.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that Alden Ehrenreich and Donald Glover did in their roles?
So overall, I think they both were good casting choices. I think that Donald Glover crushed it as Lando. I think that, like, hands down from beginning to end, as soon as he comes on screen to the very last scene that he's in, I think Donald Glover really, really gets the mannerisms of Billy Dee Williams as Lando right. He gets kind of the coolness really right, which is a really tough thing to do. Like, Lando has this natural coolness about him where he's not trying to be cool.
Uh-huh.
He's not trying to be this guy that you want to hang out with. He just is cool. And I think that Donald Glover really gets that. And I admire the way that he does that because that's really tough to do. And so I think Donald Glover crushed it. Alden Ehrenreich, I think, did pretty well. I wouldn't say he crushed it quite as much as Donald Glover, but in my opinion, he starts off a little rough. The beginning of the movie, it kind of seems like he's almost growing into the character. And then there's a point about halfway into the movie where you're like, okay, I see it. It's right about when, like, they start going on the journey in the Millennium Falcon and they're like going to get the fuel and everything like that. I think that's the point where you start to go, okay, I see it. And I think that's the point where he started to go, okay, I feel it. And you kind of see it. And then from then on, it kind of makes sense. But I think that especially a character as iconic as Han Solo and an actor as iconic as Harrison Ford, that's a tall order to fill to try to recreate anything in either of those realms. But I think Alden Ehrenreich does a pretty good job and just about as good a job, I think, as anyone could have done in trying to be a younger version of such an iconic character. So I'd say I think both of them were just about what I was hoping they would be, with Donald Glover being really, really nailing it on the head.
Yeah, I think I was really hesitant going in to watching the movie. I remember watching the previews and being like, he doesn't really look like Han Solo.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, doesn't look like him.
Yep.
But then, like, when I heard him deliver the dialogue, I was like, okay, I'll probably go see it. I mean, I was going to see it anyway, let's be honest. I was going to go watch it.
Like, who are we kidding?
I would watch it. I would hate it, but I would watch it.
But like, you would watch it.
Still do it.
You would pay your $13.
I would go see that movie. So, okay, the one thing that really threw me for a loop at the end was Darth Maul. What the heck?
Yeah, so Darth Maul really caught a lot of people off guard. Because the last time we see him, he's literally cut in half, falling down a hole.
Which we talked about in the last episode. I was very disappointed.
Yeah, right? He gets introduced in Phantom Menace and then immediately removed. And you're like, whoa, he was so cool and ominous, and then he's gone. And so the last time we see him is falling down that hole with Obi-Wan, like, crying at the feet of Qui-Gon. I mean, like, no, master! And so that's the last time we see Darth Maul. And then suddenly he pops up at the end of Solo. Yeah. And so without any context, you're like, wait a second. This guy's been dead a long time.
That was me.
What is going on? Yeah.
That was literally
I think that's
me.
What most people like.
I mean, but I was excited because he's like my favorite. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But I'm still annoyed because I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, right. And that's, I think, what a lot of people ran into after that movie was, you know, people felt the way they did about Solo. But then they get to the end and they're like, whoa, wait a second. And so it really does take a lot of kind of digging to find out where he came from and where, how we got there. And so in order to do that, you have to look back at his first reappearance since Phantom Menace is in the Clone Wars TV animated show, which is a phenomenal show, one that I would highly recommend. But he shows up at the end of the third season fourth season, I'm sorry. And he shows up at the end and he gets really found by his brother. There's this new character that they introduced at the beginning of the fourth season named Savage Opress. And it's literally spelled Savage Opress. It's really weird. But he's like a really intense character. And he's a Zabrak. That's the race of aliens that Darth Maul is.
So does he look the same?
He looks very similar. He's a little different colored. He's kind of like a yellowish and brown.
Okay.
Whereas Darth Maul is like distinctly red and black.
And he has spikies on his head?
He's got spikies on his head. He's a little bit more bulky.
That.
Yeah. The spikies are key.
Oh, the spikies?
And so he's a little bit more bulky and he's just kind of a little bit of a different character. He's less like ominous and mysterious and more just like upfront, I'm going to punch you in the face.
Okay.
And so throughout that season of the Clone Wars, there's struggling, they meaning Obi-Wan and Anakin and the Republic and everyone is struggling because Savage is doing all of this crap across the galaxy and like killing people and everything like that. And then at the end of the fourth season, with the last two episodes, Clone Wars kind of drops this bomb where there's this planet called Dathomir, which is where Darth Maul is from and Savage is from. And there's this group of like cult witch ladies called the Night Sisters. And the mother, the leader of that cult, talks to Savage and is like, hey, your brother is still alive and you need to go find him. And she reveals in like her little almost crystal ball Darth Maul's face. And so then with the last two episodes, Savage goes and he ends up finding Darth Maul on this like junk planet. And Darth Maul has gone completely crazy. He's got like literally spider legs now. And he's in underground, like, this bunker where he's literally gone crazy. He's gone mad, and he doesn't even really remember most of his life before he ended up there. And so it's a really interesting kind of way to see Darth Maul because he was so calm, cool, and collected in Phantom Menace. And then you see him literally freaking out because all he remembers is Kenobi. Kenobi, and he keeps repeating that. And so Savage comes and finds him, and all he keeps doing is, like, freaking out and going, Kenobi, Kenobi. And so Savage has to bring him back, and through this whole range of things, Darth Maul gets his memory back and then is on this mission of revenge to find Obi-Wan Kenobi with Savage and, like, enact his revenge. And so that's where he kind of comes back in the Clone Wars. And he's now got, like, metal legs, and he's running around, and...
So he's not a spider anymore.
He's not a spider anymore. They give him, like, regular metal legs.
Okay. Yeah, regular
Which
metal
makes him
legs.
Almost a little bit more ominous, because now he's, like, this weird hybrid guy. Uh-huh. He's got, like, these metal legs. But what's really interesting is that he kind of goes on this, like, spree of just... violence across the galaxy with Savage to try to find and draw out Obi-Wan to get his revenge on him. And there's a few little spats here and there, but you don't really see kind of the conclusion of that until the other animated Star Wars show, Rebels. And so in one episode in that show, and I won't spoil the end of it, they do end up meeting up, and that kind of gets closure for both of them in the way that that ends. So by the time we get to Solo, there's been a lot that's happened with Darth Maul, and he's been brought back to life, and he's come back from being crazy and everything like that. And where Solo happens is enough time before A New Hope that there's still stuff that might still be happening with Darth Maul.
Okay.
And so in Clone Wars, he kind of leads these groups of like pirates and stuff like that across the galaxy. And so that's where he shows up in Solo, is at the end. He's talking, and he's in that projection, and he's talking about kind of alluding to this group of pirates that he's leading, and that's where he ends up, is when he says to her, like, hey, we're going to be talking more soon.
Yeah.
He's talking about kind of leading up to using her in this pirate group, and so it kind of leaves us on a cliffhanger, but you're still like, what the heck? Where did he come from?
Yeah.
If you don't know all that background, which is a lot of background and a lot of time to commit to
like a
bunch
of
different things.
Series of shows.
Oh yeah. Right there. It's tough. Sometimes they get a little mixed up. Sometimes they get, so it's really interesting, but there is a lot of background that goes on with him that brings him to Solo.
Do you think, with it being confirmed that there's going to be an Obi-Wan series on Disney Plus. Yeah. Like, do we think that this is probably what they're trying to go for? Like, maybe this...
There's talk that there might be. My personal thought is that I think the storyline that they've covered with Darth Maul and Obi-Wan, I think they've covered. Mm-hmm. I would tend to lean towards saying that I don't think that that Disney Plus TV show will hit too much on it. I think it'll be almost inevitable that they'll hit somewhat on it, or at least allude to it.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that there's so much more story to tell about Obi-Wan that they won't necessarily make that the focus. Mm-hmm. Now, Ray Park, who played Darth Maul in Phantom Menace and then also played him in his appearance in Solo, didn't voice him, but played like his physical presence, has said that he's on to do whatever. Like, if Disney comes to him and is like, yo, Ray, like, can you do this thing with Darth Maul? He's like, yes. He said then when they called him up to do Solo, they literally didn't even have to finish the question. They were like, hey, we're thinking of bringing Darth Maul back for Solo. And he's like, yes, done.
Done.
I'm on a plane right now. Let's go. And so I think that he'd be happy to do it.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a lot more story and a lot more interesting stuff to cover with Obi-Wan that I don't know that that'll be the focus of the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, like, you kind of talked about the end of this movie.
Yeah.
So my question is, like, what is Darth Maul now? Like, last time we saw him, he was a Sith. And then, like, what's the relationship with Kira?
Yeah.
Like, where, what is that?
So right now, as it currently stands, Darth Maul is no longer a Sith. Or at least not officially a Sith. He still can use the Force. Uh-huh. He still has his lightsaber and everything like that. But he's not officially a Sith. Because that's kind of moved on from him. You know, you can only have the two Sith at one time. Uh-huh. And Palpatine's taken Darth Vader and that's it. So at this point, Darth Maul is no longer a Sith. But he is kind of the leader of this almost pirate group. And he has his hands in a bunch of other, like, piracy groups right now. And so where we end up at the end of Solo is that he's kind of on top of several different groups, at least as far as we know. And Kira, now kind of being within that world, is almost in a way at least associated, if not directly under his kind of purview as the leader of these groups. And so right now it kind of depends upon where they want to go. They could go the route that, like, Kira and him work together and that he's kind of hand in hand with Kira doing all their stuff, or that he's kind of the mastermind behind all this chaos that he starts ensuing on the galaxy and Kira is kind of the one helping him with that. So they could go a couple different places. I think it's pretty interesting to think about where they might go with it, though.
Yeah, I think I'm really excited to see, like, where they take this storyline and, like, what they do with it, especially with, like, Disney Plus coming. Like, they're already, like, teasing so many, like, I mean, they've confirmed a lot of Star Wars content. And then I'm sure, like, more is going to come out.
The doors
that.
Are wide open. People love Darth Maul, so they could do so many more things with him.
Courtney loves him.
Courtney, hashtag love.
This is to Disney.
Hashtag Darth Maul.
Disney, if you're listening right now, not listening.
Bob Iger, make this happen right now.
Please listen to this. Cool. So thanks so much, Joe, for joining us on another episode.
Absolutely.
He will actually be on next episode, too.
Yeah,
we have a lot of resident nerd right now.
Yes.
Because we have lots of questions. So thank you so much for joining us on this nerdy journey. We will see you next Thursday.